The Sloth Sports Show on Anchor.fm, with weekly episodes highlighting and breaking down the biggest stories across sports. Make sure to keep up with the latest episodes and breaking news on Twitter by following at Sloth Sports Show, and keep up to date with the latest breaking news around the NFL. The official site of the show, knoble87.wixsite.com/SlothSportsReport. And now, here's your host, Cole Noble.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome to the Sloth Sports Show. As always, I'm your host, Cole Noble, a.k.a. Sloth, back here on another happy Friday here, the tail end, last 2 hours of Friday. It's officially the weekend, and that means we're here back for another episode of the Sloth Sports Show. So thank you all for joining for today's episode and, you know, this week's episode. And for those who are listening throughout the week on the podcast and not tuning into the live show, happy whatever day it is to you as well. And thank you for supporting the show and supporting the channel for those who are live on YouTube right now. So we got a slam-packed episode today to talk about four big things going on, three things that happened earlier during the week, and one major thing that is going to be happening tomorrow night, and that's going to be UFC 263, a great card on deck for tomorrow night in the UFC, and we're going to talk about all the key matchups, and then, of course, give our Sloth's main card pick'em of the week for the main event of tomorrow night's UFC 263 card. But before we get started, and before we get to what, you know, all I want to talk about in today's show, I want to first start off with talking about the NBA, because the NBA playoffs so far have been phenomenal. I've loved every minute of it. And last night, my Milwaukee Bucks got a win finally against the Brooklyn Nets. After game two, it looked like all hope was lost. Za'Darius Smith of the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Jones of the Green Bay Packers showed up courtside, and we took the fight to Milwaukee last night and came away with a win against the Brooklyn Nets by a final score of 86-83, a close one at that game last night. But the Bucks make it now a 1-2 series. Brooklyn's still up 2-1, but we got Game 4 coming in, still in Milwaukee on Sunday, set up to be a great one. And Milwaukee played great last night, but still nowhere near offensively where they've been throughout the entire season. And I hope they get back on track offensively. But Chris Middleton put up 35 points. Giannis put up 30 points. Both of them played over 40 minutes. So that's what I was expecting in Game 1 and Game 2, was Giannis and Chris Middleton to be playing 40 minutes, because, like I said, you know, so far on the show, when I've talked about my Milwaukee Bucks in this series that was upcoming in the Eastern Conference playoffs, is the fact that this is the toughest matchup I think the Bucks will face throughout the remainder of the playoffs. You know, even when they played the Heat in the first round, I always said the series against the Brooklyn Nets will be the hardest series that the Bucks will have, you know, throughout the entire playoffs, if, you know, they end up going on a run here past Brooklyn. So with this being the hardest series that they're going to face in the playoffs this year, they've got to empty the tank right now. Because in my opinion, from here on out, I'm not too worried about the 76ers or the Atlanta Hawks or whatever team comes out of the Western Conference. I think the Bucks can, you know, pretty much pair well with anyone we face. And we're so far proving that, and proved that last night against the Brooklyn Nets. And once we get our offense going, I think we can take our team and, you know, this postseason run to another level for the Milwaukee Bucks. But as of right now in this series, they got to empty the gas tank, let it all out. Give, you know, Giannis and Chris Middleton need to be playing these upwards of 40 minutes a game. And like I said, just go all out in this series. So again, Game 4 on Sunday. Hopefully the Green Bay Packers come out and represent again, like Za'Darius Smith and Aaron Jones did last night. They had the whole crowd roaring at the arena, sitting courtside, and just brought all the energy for the entire team. And in my opinion, probably was a big part of us end up getting that win. And of course, it helped if Kyrie Irving not taking the final shot in that game. So got a little lucky, but we'll take luck all we can get in the playoffs and hope to, you know, get things going and rolling smoothly in game four. But also last night in the Western Conference, as of right now, the Utah Jazz are up 2-0 against the LA Clippers, and they're going to be taking things to LA tomorrow night at 8:30 for game three. So far, Donovan Mitchell has been playing amazing against the LA Clippers, and Kawhi Leonard, his days are starting to get numbered as an LA Clipper. Potentially, if he gets bumped out of the playoffs again, he could be on the move this offseason. So that's an interesting series to watch unfold, and also a team to watch unfold out of the Western Conference. And then, as of today, we are in the fourth quarter as we speak with 4 minutes to go, with the 76ers up 114-98 against the Atlanta Hawks. And then in that series, it is 1-1, a series split in that one. And then tonight at 10, we got, is 10, but starting here, shortly tipping off here, the Phoenix Suns against the Denver Nuggets. Phoenix is actually leading 2-0. The point guard is putting in the work. Chris Paul has been playing great the first two games. Devin Booker is playing great as well. And Nikola Jokic, the reigning MVP, he's got to set things up here. Just the backcourt for the Denver Nuggets cannot compete right now with the Phoenix Suns. And it's going to be all on Jokic to just have an all-out game if they're even going to try to steal one against the Phoenix Suns, the way that, you know, the Suns are catching fire, at, like we like to say, again so far this year. But overall, the NBA playoffs have been amazing, and I love the fact that, you know, I hate to see it, but having no Steph Curry and no LeBron James is good for the future of the league, and seeing these young faces, you know, go on the runs here. Granted, we still got, you know, Harden, KD, and Kyrie, although Harden is out right now for the Brooklyn Nets, but KD and Kyrie still doing things. Still got Kawhi in the Western Conference as well. But I like these young talents making noise right now in the NBA playoffs, and it's, you know, showing that the rest of the league is in great hands and the future of the league is in great hands in the NBA. But that's enough NBA talk, so let's get down to business of what we're going to be talking about in today's episode. So I alluded to the fact that we're going to be talking, of course, about UFC 263, which is tomorrow night. But before we get to that one, because we're going to get to that next and start talking about some of these fights, but before we get there, we will also be discussing the trade that happened last Sunday, sending Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans. So the Titans get the star wide receiver franchise leader for the Atlanta Falcons. The Tennessee Titans are the team that eventually have now landed Julio. So talk about, you know, the trade, break it down since we haven't, you know, been able to yet, and talk about, you know, what's going on. Right now, Julio, he's already showed up to training camp. He's practicing with the Titans now. We'll talk a little bit about some number situations going on in the aftermath of that deal. And along with that in the NFL, we'll do a little bit of some check-ins during mini camp. Check in with a couple teams. See, you know, which teams have been making the most buzz. Of course, the Green Bay Packers have been making a lot of buzz, probably the most buzz out of all the teams in the NFL so far through minicamp. So talk about what's been going on this week in that in that terms of things, and what's going on so far through minicamp around the league. And then finally, some big news that we'll end on in terms of college football and the future of where college football is going to go. And I'm excited to get into that one as well, because the last 2 days, 3 days, that's been a hot subject to talk about, so I'm excited to dive deeper into that one as well. But like I said, let's go ahead and get started with UFC 263 tomorrow night. We have two title fights in contention on the card. We also have a fight tomorrow night that will set up the winner to get a title fight tomorrow night. And also, you know, this, the entire card is slated to be a great one. Got early prelims, and then the main card begins. And the main card is where all the magic's going to happen tomorrow night and all of the great fights. But a lot of fights will be happening tomorrow on this, you know, in this event, and I'm excited. So let's go ahead and kick things off and just, you know, let's just talk about the card itself before we get, you know, to the main event, Israel Adesanya against Marvin Vettori. So let's go ahead and just look at the rest of the card. So like I talked about, we will be seeing a fight that will set up some, you know, it'll set up the winner to be in contention for a title fight. And that's going to be in the welterweight division between Leon Edwards and Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz is back. He will be back tomorrow night taking on Leon Edwards. Been, you know, many years since we've seen Nate Diaz. I believe it's been since 2018 that Nate Diaz has been in the octagon in the UFC fighting. So he's going to be making his return against Leon Edwards, who Leon Edwards is one of the fastest rising fighters in the welterweight division and a guy that I'm really keen on and really starting to like in the welterweight division. But of course, with Nate Diaz being back, this one might be the show stealer of the night. Might be this fight, because if Nate Diaz comes out on top, he gets a title shot just like that upon his return to the UFC. So that one, of course, will be a great fight. Another one we're going to see is Damian Miana will be taking on Bilal Muhammad. Muhammad coming back. His last fight was against Leon Edwards, and that was actually the fight, I believe, where Bilal Muhammad was the one that, you know, got the eyelid poked out. Was bleeding, and they unfortunately had to call the fight off. He couldn't see anymore, and they just had to end that one, giving Edwards the win. If my memory is correct, I believe that's how that ended up shaking out. And then the first title fight that will be going on tomorrow night is going to be Davison Figueiredo against Brandon Moreno, and that's going to be a flyweight title fight. Figueiredo right now is the flyweight title holder, and he will be looking to defend that title against Moreno. And then finally, the main event of tomorrow night, UFC middleweight title fight between Israel Adesanya and Marvin Vettori. And this will be the fight that we're going to be picking on the show. The other ones we're just going to have fun with. And just watch them on the card tomorrow night. But this one here, Adesanya against Vettori, will be my Slaw's main card pick'em of the week for UFC 263. So we're just going to pick one. Sitting at an 11-7 record right now. We're down the last two fights we picked. So I don't want to get too crazy with it this weekend. Just get, you know, hopefully a win, get back on track here with our Slaw's main card pick'em of the week. So let's dive into this fight. Dive into this main event of the card tomorrow, and start to start off with breaking down this fight. Obviously, this will be a rematch from 2018 when Israel Adesanya beat Marvin Vettori by a split decision. A lot of controversy in that fight. Marvin Vettori still believes he won that fight against Israel Adesanya. But ultimately, the way, you know, the judge's decision went down, the way the scores went down, Adesanya was the one crowned victorious at the end of that fight, and has since gone on to do great things since 2018, all the way up until March 6th of this year, when Israel Adesanya lost to Jan Blachowicz. Lost, you know, first loss in his career. He is 20-1. Before March 6th, Izzy Adesanya was 20-0 in his career and was flat out dominant. One of the most dominant fighters in the entire UFC so far during his career, which has really skyrocketed the last couple of years. But went up in a class, went up to, you know, challenge Blachowicz, who was the title holder himself, to try to be, you know, win two titles at the same time and, you know, be hold two titles. But ultimately couldn't get up to weight, lost late in that fight. And really, you just saw Israel Adesanya just start getting tired in that one. Blachowicz was really working him, working the size advantage against him, and ultimately just ended up being too much for Izzy to really compete with. But at the end of the day, Adesanya is the number three ranked pound-for-pound fighter in the world. And still the number one ranked middleweight fighter in the UFC, who is now coming back down to his weight class, back down to the middleweight division, and looking for his third title defense as the middleweight champion of the world. So when we look at this fight, and you look back at the original fight in 2018, when it ended up going to the decision, really what Marvin Vettori did well against Israel Adesanya in that first fight was the fact that he grappled, worked the close game against Izzy, and most importantly, got the takedowns. He got Izzy on his back, and when Izzy's on his back, he never does well. Historically in his career, if a fighter gets him on the ground, gets him on his back, gets the takedowns, that's where Israel Adesanya starts to struggle, and he's really at his best when he's standing up, when he's controlling the distance, and really starting to work those counter strikes in. And that's where the big knockout chances come from Israel Adesanya, is the counters, the leg kicks, the head kicks. Those type of things is what you see from Israel Adesanya when he's on his game and doing what he wants to do. So that really sets up what we expect from tomorrow night, from both fighters' standpoint. From Israel Adesanya, you expect him to try to keep the distance away from Marvin Vettori, not letting him get close, keep the distance, and really start to get those counter strikes in. You know, dodge, hit the counters on him, and ultimately look for that knockout in that fight. But on the other side, Vettori, he might be the dangerous one in this fight. But, and you know, I've always, you know, my time picking, you know, the Slaw's main card pick'ems of the weeks, picking the fights, I've really learned that the confident fighter is always the most dangerous one. And every fight you have, or every fight Israel Adesanya has had, even Jan Blachowicz, his opponent has respected him. They, you know, respected him, but also from a certain standpoint, they feared Israel Adesanya. But for Marvin Vettori, in that first fight in 2018, when he realized he can go the distance and actually got the split decision and a close decision, he knew at that moment that he can stand toe-to-toe and fight and win against Israel Adesanya. He's just right there on the edge of beating him for this title. And when it's all said, going into this fight tomorrow night, Vittori's confident. And I really like the guys who are always confident. I like the confidence. I like how they handle themselves going into fights. And this has been sprung since he lost that fight in 2018. When Vettori said it himself, he should have won that fight. And ever since that day, he has been calling for a rematch after every single fight he's had since then, where he has gone 5-0 and won 5 straight fights, including a fight back in April, a unanimous decision against Kevin Holland, but 5 fight win streak for Marvin Vettori. He's playing with a lot of, or fighting with a lot of confidence right now, and he feels like he's in a good spot to take on the champion in Israel Adesanya. But ultimately, when I look at this fight, yes, Marvin Vettori does look a lot more fundamentally sound. And when you compare him, you know, tail the tape side by side to Israel Adesanya, he's a lot more better of a grappler, a lot more better, you know, on the ground and ground control, taking down, getting the takedowns, getting everything that would earn him points toward taking this to a decision and winning. Potentially by a decision, whether it's split or unanimous, whatever it may be, Vettori looks more fundamentally sound to do so than Israel Adesanya. But the real question is, this all comes down to the fact that will Marvin Vettori get the takedowns against Israel Adesanya? Because Israel Adesanya has an 82% takedown defense, and that's going to be tough to go against if you're Marvin Vettori. Knowing your, you know, real path to victory in this fight is getting Israel Adesanya on his back. Somehow you got to take him down. He's not going to be a guy. You're not, you know, he's not a guy you're going to knock down. Somehow you got to get a takedown on this guy. You got to get in close and grapple with him and bring him to the ground. And historically, that's not been the case against Israel Adesanya. The only person successfully really to do that was Jan Blachowicz, who had a severe size advantage in that fight against Israel Adesanya. And Adesanya still nearly took it all the way to the end against Blachowicz, and you know, just flat out got tired against a bigger, stronger opponent. Tired him out, and smart fight there by Blachowicz. It was a tough loss for me because, you know, when I picked that fight, I said, yeah, I will never pick against Israel Adesanya, and ultimately it was a bad pick. I'll admit it by me. Didn't quite think it too far in depth in that fight, or maybe, you know, too far in depth and didn't realize the obvious there in that one. But I still think my standpoint when I picked that fight in March 6th for Izzy, you know, saying never bet against Israel Adesanya, I'm still leaning that way. And a lot of expert picks, the heavy majority that I've seen, have Marvin Vettori winning by decision against Israel Adesanya. But like I said, I will never bet against Israel Adesanya. So my Slaw's main card pick'em of the week tomorrow night for this main event of UFC 263, I'll have Israel Adesanya winning either by decision or TKO against Marvin Vettori. And again, that's my Slaw's main card pick'em of the week. And before we get out of here, before we move on, real quick, I do want to show something here. This press conference between Marvin Vettori and Israel Adesanya yesterday. Check this out. And this just really shows how intense this fight is going to be tomorrow night, because this is how their press conference went yesterday.
Try it again. Try me again. Look at him. You know what that's called? That's called roid rage. That's called roid rage. Try me again. That ain't caffeine. That's roid rage, bitch.
Thank you, Arizona. We appreciate it. I'm going to square these guys off right now.
So it's definitely going to be great in this fight tomorrow night. I'm really excited for this one. And excited, like I said, for the entire card of what we're going to see. Especially the return of Nate Diaz is going to be a heavy fan favorite one as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to continue on with the rest of this week's episode, starting with the huge trade last weekend that sent Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans. We'll be right back here on the Slaw Sports Show. All right, so welcome back here to the Slaw Sports Show. Again, I'm your host, Cole Noble, a.k.a. Slaw. So we got our UFC main card pick'em of the week for UFC 263 tomorrow night. Again, we're picking Israel Adesanya to win by decision or TKO against Marvin Vettori, an 11-7 record. We got to get back in the win column, hopefully going or getting the edge here with Israel Adesanya. He failed me last time, gave me an L last time I picked Izzy, but we're going back with him again in this fight tomorrow, back in his weight class, and I feel strong about Israel Adesanya winning against Marvin Vettori. But that's enough about the UFC. Let's move on now here to the NFL. And like I said before we went to a break, the big storyline early in the week was Julio Jones, who as of Sunday, and you know, official late Sunday, is now a Tennessee Titan. The trade will send Julio Jones in a 2023 sixth-round pick to the Tennessee Titans, while the Atlanta Falcons will be receiving a 2022 second and a 2023 fourth-round pick. So Julio Jones, now out of the NFC South and into the AFC South with the Tennessee Titans, and really the Tennessee Titans from the get-go. Derrick Henry and mainly A.J. Brown were really rooting and pushing for a trade to land Julio Jones. A.J. Brown going as far as willing to give up the number 11 to Julio Jones. But now that they got him and said Julio Jones won't be wearing 11 anymore, and won't be taking AJ Brown's number. He's instead going to be wearing number 2 with the Tennessee Titans and will be another weapon for Ryan Tannehill in that offense. But the offense, like I talked about last week with Matt Laguza when we did our NFL division rankings, when you look at the Tennessee Titans, it's hard to see what their offense is going to be next year. And I said there's going to be some growing pains early on for the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, that's where we got to ultimately the record we predicted for the Tennessee Titans in our show last week. If you missed that, it is on the YouTube and on the podcast. So go check that one out. If you missed it, it was a great episode with Matt Laguza. But it's going to be difficult to see what this offense really is going to look like. Because, you know, during the offseason, offensive coordinator from last year, Arthur Smith is now the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. So the offensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans is now gone. And we'll see what kind of change their offense really has with their new offensive coordinator stepping up into that role left by Arthur Smith. Is their offense still going to be as run heavy with Derrick Henry? Or is it going to be, you know, maybe sprinkling in a lot more passing situations and passing plays now that you added Julio Jones? I definitely still see a lot of play action, and that's for sure coming out of Tennessee with the Titans, mainly because of the threat that Derrick Henry has against defenses. And it's going to be hard to keep them honest against the run in the pass. So similar to the Cleveland Browns, the play action will work a lot to their favor. And adding in Julio Jones, another guy who's really going to be the deep threat, while A.J. Brown serves as the intermediate route guy, the in routes, the post routes, and the out routes guy, like he usually does. He is dominant at the in routes, especially throughout his 2 years in the National Football League. And that's going to be the case again this year. Working in that play action and continuing to feast on that will be the bread and butter of the Tennessee Titans. But still, I think there's going to be a little bit of growing pains with the new system potentially and on offense and a new play caller coming in there for that team next year. But the main thing with Julio Jones, and it was the main thing that was talked about throughout the entire trade rumors, all of the talk, was Julio Jones's health. You know, he's going now into his 30s, you know, starting to get creep closer and closer to the wrong side of his 30s, and dealt with some injury concerns last year. The last 2 to 3 years, he's been dealing with some snap count issues, not really being on the field for every snap, every game, and, you know, just constantly is not really on the field. However, when he's on the field, he's still Julio Jones, a future Hall of Fame wide receiver who is dominant in his own right, and has been, and I think still will continue to be when he's on the field. But Julio Jones, first week of practice this week as a Tennessee Titan, when he finally met with the media, and after practice and met with the media, a direct quote that stood out to me is Julio Jones said, "For those who questioned my health, stay tuned." Because Julio Jones, I think this year, is going to go on a statement with the Tennessee Titans, and we'll see what kind of statement that will be. But I'm definitely excited for what he's going to do with that offense, what he's going to do with Ryan Tannehill. And of course, with that big contract, $15.3 million, the way the trade worked out, Tennessee will take on the entire contract, which was a big thing to think about in terms of this trade, because that's the main reason Julio Jones is gone from Atlanta, is that cap hit he has. But the Titans were able to rework Ryan Tannehill's contract to fit in Julio Jones to make this deal really complete and finalized. But at the end of the day, Julio Jones will be an interesting player to watch next year with the Tennessee Titans. I mean, it's the first time ever we've seen him anywhere outside of the Atlanta Falcons in his entire career, and we'll see what he can still do, see what he can still produce, being one of the, you know, top-rated wide receivers in the National Football League, still up there in the top 5 category in the National Football League. And now paired up with A.J. Brown, see what he can do here with this offense. But something I do want to pull up here, and we've already brought up one of his tweets before, but this isn't his tweet. This is actually press conference after practice of DeAndre Hopkins, who was traded last offseason for David Johnson, a second round pick and a fourth round pick, for DeAndre Hopkins and a fourth round pick, went to the Arizona Cardinals from the Houston Texans, which brought up a lot of comparisons. Because Julio Jones, like I said, was traded for a second and a fourth, the same as DeAndre Hopkins, minus, you know, David Johnson, who was added with the Hopkins trade. But here we have a tweet from my from NFL Update at My Sports Update that says DeAndre Hopkins had some fun when asked about the he and Julio Jones only being traded for second round picks. And DeAndre Hopkins was quoted saying, "I would like to see a first round pick that can do what Julio Jones and myself do." But of course, he did give props to Justin Jefferson, who was balling as a first rounder last season. We all know the great season Justin Jefferson had. But I think there's some truth to this. I really think DeAndre Hopkins is coming from a logical standpoint when he, you know, made these comments at the press conference after practice. Because realistically, how many first-round picks turn out to be franchise and all-pro to potential Hall of Fame caliber players that DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones can be when it's all said and done in their career? Very few, like 2% of first-round picks go on to end up being that type of player in their career, because the majority of the first round picks always end up being bust anyways. Look back at all the previous drafts the last 15 years. So it's really confusing how these players aren't getting traded for first round picks. I know we saw DeForest Buckner get traded for a first round pick last year, going to the Indianapolis Colts. We saw Jamal Adams get traded for multiple first round picks as a safety. It's really interesting how we don't see these star franchise wide receivers, you know, top five wide receivers, arguably top three wide receivers, not getting traded for first round picks. It's just completely insane to me to even think about. In my opinion, yes, we have had two back-to-back insane classes of wide receivers coming into the National Football League, but that's not to say that's going to be a trend. That's not to say that star receiver is going to come into the league, you know, year after year from here on out in the draft. I don't think that's the case. And I don't understand why more teams were not in on Julio Jones. Personally, that's my opinion on it. You know, we talked about with Myles Garrett 2 weeks ago the thought of Green Bay Packers being, should have been one of the front runners. Fix your Aaron Rodgers situation. Move on from Jordan Love. Make things right with Rodgers by adding in Julio Jones. You know, Jordan Love in a first or a second for Julio Jones. Green Bay never got in on it. Never was even part of it. And, you know, the Baltimore Ravens and the New England Patriots, they backed out of it, you know, not even last minute. You know, pretty early on in the process, they were out of it. The Rams, earlier than them, were out of it. And the Rams, we know, are no strangers to trading away draft picks to land star players that will help them win a Super Bowl, which, again, is that not the goal in the National Football League, to win a Super Bowl? And, I mean, adding players like DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones puts you in that direction. There's no say that a first-round pick or a second-round pick will do that. In year one, year two, could even wait till year four or five until these players start really becoming star players, you know, some of them. And the draft is all pretty much hopes and dreams. And you're hoping that you made the right decision with your draft picks, that they will turn out to be franchise players. Some of them do, a lot of them don't. And when you look at these trades, DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones are proven stars at their positions. And really, just the last thing I got to say about it, and just because it's just going to drive me crazy keep talking about it. But it just makes no sense why more teams were not interested in Julio Jones. But the Tennessee Titans added a dog at wide receiver with Julio coming in next to A.J. Brown. And we'll see what they can do in that division now. See if they can repeat as division winners in the AFC South. Last week we had the Colts winning it, but really didn't factor in this Julio Jones trade and you know the Julio Jones potential trade to the Tennessee Titans when me and Matt Laguza did our divisional rankings last week and put up really the record boards of where the teams are going to fall when we looked at the schedule. But still, I think it's going to be a tight division race even after the Julio Jones trade between the Titans and the Colts, and I'm not going to backtrack on any of my picks. I still feel really strongly on the picks me and Matt put together last week, and just Julio Jones is a Titan. It's a done deal, now official, and excited to see him get to work with his new team. And of course, we got to mention as well, the NFC South just has to be ecstatic to have Julio Jones finally out of their division. That's all we got to say, so let's keep moving on here. So continuing in the NFL, before we get to the big news of the week, we're going to just check in into mini camp around the NFL, hit some pit stops. We got four really stops around the NFL that we want to hit on. And of course, you look at the backdrops behind me. We're going to start in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where minicamp's officially underway, and Aaron Rodgers is a no-show. He is officially MIA from training camp, and so far hasn't been fined, but potentially fines are on the horizon for Aaron Rodgers if he continues to miss time, continues to miss camp. Still holding on to this decision of not, holding on to this decision of not showing up, still in this battle between the front office of the Green Bay Packers. And again, we had a whole episode on it 3 weeks ago, I believe it was, maybe four, where nothing is new. Nothing is still new in this situation. Aaron Rodgers, we knew he wasn't going to show up. It is now official. We knew it was going to happen. Nothing's new. But it'll be interesting to see how this ends up getting settled. Because still, the Green Bay Packers are firm on the fact that they will not be trading the league MVP in Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers still, obviously, not showing up as a Green Bay Packer so far this year. So we'll see what kind of resolution comes to place between these two sides and what ends up happening. But in the meantime, training camp still continued for the Green Bay Packers this week without their star quarterback. And instead, it was first-round pick Jordan Love making headlines this week, especially as the week continued past Tuesday when the first practice started. And, again, there's a huge media craze that Rodgers wasn't there. But again, we knew that was going to be the case. It was nothing new. But the headlines finally turned away from Rodgers and instead turn over to Jordan Love, who so far this week was hot and cold at various times, still doing just basic drills in practice, finally started to get some 11-on-11 action and, reps with the offense, first-team offense, against air every day. And just in the red zone drills, two-minute offense drills, move down the field, full-on 11-on-11 against the defense. Jordan Love had flashes of great moments this week, but also had some not-so-good moments. So we're going to pull it up here and really just break down what we saw from Jordan Love this week of practice. And we're bringing this thanks to Rob Domowski, ESPN reporter of the Green Bay Packers, who is there at training camp all week and really detailed. And I really appreciate the work he did, doing a great job detailing the practice this week in Green Bay. So this comes out, I believe it was on, So yeah, this was Tuesday, first day of practice of the week on, looks like June the 8th. Rod Novowski tweeted out and said, Jordan Love's first crack at the two-minute drill that we've seen so far barely got past midfield and ended up with him skying a pass over wide open Malik Taylor's head on a 4th and 7 at the plus 46-yard line. So that's the first really two-minute drill we saw of Jordan Love so far with the offense of the Green Bay Packers in practice this week. So that was the cold of Jordan Love. Now we go over to Wednesday, day two of practice this week. Rod Domowski again says, what a stretch from Jordan Love today. Threw a wheel route to A.J. Dillon on the right sideline for 30 yards. Fitted in between, I think, Kamal Martin and Adrian Amos. Put it right on the money between both of them. Right in the breadbasket of A.J. Dillon, who, again, it's a 240-pound running back. Running wheel routes down the sideline. I'm in love with A.J. Dillon this year. Being our number two back behind Aaron Jones. Even more so if he's starting to get some, you know, receiving opportunities this early in practice as well. But again, just a quick little off-the-road topic there. But back to this tweet. After the wheel route to A.J. Dillon, we had a free play deep to Alan Lazard, catching the defense off guard for 45 yards. And then later on in practice, had a deep corner route to Juwan Winfrey, racked up another 30 yards on that play. And continuing on, another 30-yard bomb, deep sideline to Aaron Jones out of the backfield. Rod Domowski said that that Jordan Love was so on fire that tight end coach Justin Oden had to start fanning him with his clipboard. So that was on Wednesday in practice, and yesterday, I believe he was both hit and miss in practice. Jordan Love was. He had a pass breakup happened by Shamar Jean Charles, the App State guy we drafted this year at corner. Had a good pass breakup in practice yesterday. Also yesterday, first round pick Eric Stokes. He jumped a route that Marcus Valdez-Scantling ran on an out route. Eric Stokes jumped it, showed off his speed, and picked off Jordan Love on that one. But I do also believe he had a couple touchdowns. May have had one to Big Bob Tunyon, my man, at tight end. So Jordan Love finally starting to get some work in. I believe he's already had more reps in training camp this year than he did all of last year. Of course, last year we had all of the COVID situations going on during training camp, and it took forever really to get in person in training camp last year. But Jordan Love finally making progress going into year two with the Green Bay Packers. And this week, finally sat down in front of the media, said first, right off the bat, he hasn't been in contact with Aaron Rodgers, but didn't get much into detail about that. But he did say, at the end of the day, he's here to play quarterback, and he's ready to be quarterback one if need be. Hopefully, that will not be the case when we get to week one. But nevertheless, I'm excited for Jordan Love. We haven't seen much of him, and I'm excited to see him get some at least preseason work this year. Hopefully get a couple games in. Also get to see Blake Bortles get some preseason work as well. And ultimately, when we get down to week one, we hope to see this guy up here behind us, Aaron Rodgers, back in week one in the starting lineup. But nevertheless, that's our pit stop in Green Bay. Moving on, sick in the NFC North with the Chicago Bears. Rookie quarterback Justin Fields, a little bit of talk here coming out this week. Head coach Matt Nagy said that Justin Fields, he'll rip your heart out, was the direct quote that Matt Nagy had. And Justin Fields, I talked about it with Matt last week, breaking down the Bears. It'll be interesting to see when he gets the reins. Because he's so far from everything I've read and seen, he's looked great with the Chicago Bears so far through his first week of practice. Full mini camp underway this week. Justin Fields has supposedly looked good from what I've seen, but we'll see at what point he gets the reins. The Bears are still adamant that Andy Dalton will be the week one starter. I guess he deserved that much. Getting the contract he had in the offseason. But with this leadership group of Pace and Nagy. Both guys on the hot seat. Both guys have a 1 year, you got to do something right this year stipulation that they have with the Chicago Bears. It'll be interesting to see how long they hold on to Andy Dalton as their starter before ultimately turning it over at some point, you would assume, to Justin Fields. I mean, they traded up for him in the first round and took him out of Ohio State. And it'll be interesting to see when he finally steps on the field as the regular season starter for the Chicago Bears. And more quarterback news. It's pretty much all we got so far outside of Julio Jones. Just some quarterback news to catch up on through minicamp. Earlier in the week, I believe actually it was yesterday, we heard Ian Rappaport on the Pat McAfee show quoting that this will be the first QB training camp competition in the last three decades for the New England Patriots. Between Cam Newton and Mac Jones. Cam Newton right now, I believe, is out of practice dealing with a hand issue. Hunter Henry also got a little bit banged up this week in practice. But Mac Jones, who has now been nicknamed Mac and Cheese by Cam Newton. From what Ian Rappaport was saying on the Pat McAfee show, this is going to be a competition for the starting job. Still no starting quarterback has been named. It's not like the Fields versus Andy Dalton training camp competition where a starter has already been named for week one. It's still an open competition between Mac Jones and Cam Newton. And Cam Newton right now is in a bad spot with that hand injury, missing practice, allowing Mac Jones to really shine right now here as we go into next week being the second week of minicamp and seeing what Mac Jones can keep putting together and keep showing off. Without Cam Newton taking reps away from him. And then finally, last but not least, we got to give some love to Ryan Fitzpatrick. We saw the first day of camp picture of Ryan Fitzpatrick holding up, the chalkboard. And then we also saw the cicadas and the beard of Ryan Fitzpatrick. He seems to be enjoying himself in Washington minicamp right now. And Fitzpatrick is set up to be one of my favorite quarterbacks this year. It's a guy who's getting better year after year, keeps getting better. And I said it last week, and Matt got a little bit offended by me saying this as a Jets fan, but this is the best roster and complete team Ryan Fitzpatrick has ever had in his career that he has this year with the Washington football team. And I'm expecting, for those who also saw the show last week, I'm expecting the Washington football team to repeat as NFC Beast champions for the second year in a row, this time under Ryan Fitzpatrick. So that's all we really have to check in on from minicamp as it continues to roll on throughout the weeks. We will eventually start getting in more depth into the training camp. I believe the Giants and Browns will eventually have some joint practices together. I'm sure there may be something with the Rams and Chargers potentially having some joint practices. I would assume that might be the case with them being in the same city, see them two get together. The other thing out of LA with the Rams is Sean McVay of San Diego is having the most fun coaching he's ever had so far this year, thanks in part to Matthew Stafford. The Dark Horse MVP candidate Matthew Stafford, actually both LA quarterbacks, I believe, will be dark horse candidates for the MVP award this year. Stafford and Herbert with the Chargers. So that's all we have here for our mini camp check-in. Now let's move over and talk about college football, because college football made a lot of noise the last 2 days when they came out and decided that they will be moving on to a 12-team playoff expansion starting in 2025. After the 2025 season, so the 2026 season, we'll see a 12-team playoff expansion, moving from 4 teams to 12 teams. And this is absolutely incredible for the sport. the way this is going to work out, the sixth highest ranked conference champs and the sixth highest ranked remaining teams will be the 12 teams comprised in the 12-team playoff expansion. The top four seeds, teams 1 through 4, which of course will have to be conference champions, will get first-round byes. Sorry, Notre Dame. You just got to join the ACC at some point. But teams 5 through 8 will be battling for home field advantage in the first round. And then, of course, you will have 9 through 12 on the road in the playoffs in week one. In the first round of the playoffs. So this is now a proposed expansion that is getting a lot of steam pushing forward. And all in all, this new expansion of college football is going to be great for the little guys. It's going to be great for the smaller teams. You know, you think about last year, it's going to be great for the Coastal Carolinas. It's going to be great for the Cincinnati's, for the Iowa States, these smaller schools that never get a shot. And even UCF, who had 2 straight undefeated seasons and didn't get into the playoffs. This is great for those teams. And it's also great for the underdog stories. It's great for the upset stories. It's great for the small college towns who will now get to host a college football playoff game. This is a great scenario and a great situation for college football, all in all, and I'm excited for it to really come into place, because at its root, college football is great because of the upsets. Because upsets are possible in college football. And now, in the 2026 season, which ultimately this might get pushed even sooner if this picks up the steam it's picking up right now and continues to do so, this can get pushed sooner than the 2026 season. But it's going to be great for the upset stories. We're going to see a lot more upsets for the 12-team playoffs, and I'm excited to see this really get to work in college football. And while we're talking about it, let's pull it up here from ESPN. I think it is Stats and Information, I believe it was, posted this one on their Twitter. This is what it would have looked like this year. This would have looked like having a 12-team expanded playoffs if it happened this year. The 1 through 4 seeds with the first-round byes, obviously number 1, Alabama, and then Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. Oklahoma would be the 4 seed over Notre Dame, because we talked about they would receive the bye as being the 4th highest ranked conference champ. So this is why I said at some point Notre Dame will have to get into the ACC, have to get into conference, if this is the proposed official decision of college football and they make this into a done deal with this proposal. At some point, Notre Dame's got to pick a conference and got to join one, because they'll never be able to get into the top 4 and never get that first round bye. But, so Notre Dame aside, we put in Oklahoma now at the 4 spot from what we saw this year in the playoffs. But then you're adding Cincinnati with Desmond Ridder against Georgia as the 8-9. Notre Dame will instead face Coastal Carolina, and Grayson McCall, like I said, is going to be great for schools like Coastal Carolina being a 12-team playoffs. Texas A&M and Indiana and Florida and Iowa State with Brock Purdy and Kyle Trask would have been battling it out had this been in place this year. So it's a great proposal by college football, and it's going to be a great, ultimately, decision made by college football when this becomes official. And it's going to be great for all sport, the entire sport. And I'm excited that this is finally getting pushed as heavily as it is. Talks of expansion have been going on for years now. And there's been debates of, is it going to be 6 teams, 8 teams, 10 teams, 16 teams, even on the far spectrum. But I think 12 is a good fit. I like the number 12. I like a... 4 teams getting the bye and allowing 5 through 8 to get home field advantage at their school in a playoff situation, in a playoff environment. I think it's just incredible to have in college football. So that's exciting to see come out in the sport, and excited to see how that's going to play out once we eventually get to that point. A couple years down the line, as it currently is, but still going to be exciting when we get there. That's all the time we have on the Slaw Sports Show today, so thank you all for joining me. Cutting a little bit short here, but again, that's all we have to talk about. Hit on a lot of big headlines that happened throughout the sports world this week. Let's go ahead and actually, before we close off the episode today, go ahead and give another check-in the NBA. See how things transpired. The 76ers did end up winning 127-111 against the Atlanta Hawks. They're now up 2-1 on the series. In that one, looks like they're going to be going over now to Philadelphia. I think they're still in Atlanta for going to be game four in that one. And at the moment, the Phoenix Suns are up 40-34 with 8:38 to go in the second quarter of that game. So that's all the time we have. Thank you all for joining me for this week's episode of the Slaw Sports Show. We're tired here, so we're going to be calling it quits. Have a great weekend. Thank you all for stopping by. If you missed any part of today's episode, we'll be posting it tomorrow morning on the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get a podcast, you'll find the Slaw Sports Show. Keep up to date with everything we also have coming out on Twitter, everything we have posting on there, retweeting, all great content as well. And remember, Slaw's main card pick'em of the week tomorrow night for UFC 263, 11-7 record. We're taking Israel Adesanya by decision or TKO, getting his third title defense in the middleweight division against Marvin Vettori. Excited to see that fight. Excited to see the entire card we have tomorrow night for UFC 263. Make sure to check that out. And as always, keep supporting the Milwaukee Bucks. We're on the come up right now, and might start gaining some steam off this win we had last night. So I'm excited about that one as well. But until next time,